Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hey.
Happy
Hi.
Golden Globe Day when we're recording this.
That's right.
Are you all, are your stylists with you to get you with your facial treatments and green juice?
My dress is amazing.
Was it the first one you looked at or the last option they
Oh, I'm just low
presented?
maintenance. I do it in like an hour, you know? No fuss.
Well, I was watching the new Carrie Fisher, Debbie Reynolds documentary
I
last
watched
night.
that last night. Yeah. So
And
much.
I just wanted to make my own glitter and slather it over my face today.
That was amazing, especially because it was like foreshadowed by like two or three scenes where you saw her and you were just like, what is that on her face that like haphazardly applied glitter?
Was an experimental documentary, non-linear. Wait, why is her face shiny?
Who's making her own glitter, Debbie or Carrie?
Carrie.
Carrie.
And she
Man.
just slathers it over too. Like the scene you see her applying it, you're like, oh, you weren't joking around.
We did not appreciate her enough.
It was really a good, it was a really good documentary. It was a really good sort of window into their lives together.
There's a lot of gray gardens.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you know what? Anybody who has a suitcase named Arnold is a friend to me.
What have you guys sufficiently made it through everything you intended to see before the Golden Globes tonight?
Almost everything that's possible to see in Chicago, like 20th Century Women's not open here yet, which is the big one for me. Patterson and Tony Erdman aren't here yet.
Yeah, I still need to see Tony Erdman.
Oh, I'm the only one who's seen it, but I will just say I don't understand the fuss.
Ooh.
No, it was good, but don't get me wrong, it was good. It was exactly like binge watching like a short, Netflix comedy or something.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was so structurally just like a sitcom, like a little like half hour,
So, of the
intervals of
other
humor.
Globe nominees for foreign language film, which one would you go for? Divines, it's Elle, it's Neruda, and The Salesman, and then Tony Erdman.
L with Neruda as a quick chaser.
I think I would go The Salesman with Neruda as a quick chaser.
Well, I'm and Salesman is like really close to Neruda in my list. I think they're both at the end of the top 20
Yeah.
currently.
It is a good list. Yeah.
And we'll see. It might be preferable to the Oscars since they eliminated a lot of good
They did.
movies.
They sure
Yeah.
did.
As I was saying before we started recording, I haven't been able to bring myself to see Hacksaw Ridge, and I feel guilty because I kind of brushed off American Sniper a couple of years ago and like kind of watched it at home and didn't really give it attention. And then Nick, I think you're the big defender of it, so I feel like I still owe it like a serious watch. I just really don't want to watch it.
I've seen Hacksaw Ridge, and it's no American Sniper. I'll tell you
Right,
that.
there you go.
It's one of those things that is so incredibly over the top in what it's doing in both the beginning half of the film, that's very sort of like simple and Americana, and then the second half of the film, which is like Platoon on steroids. But it's so over the top in both of those directions.
I was just confused whether he ever felt like, I wish I could go get one more. And I say that because 25 times in voiceover, he says, I just want to go get one more. And then there's a whole DVD feature that's just built into the end of the movie
Oh
where
my
he's
God, that's so
not for Mel
bad.
Gibson, just a photo of the real guy. Let's talk to him for 10 minutes.
It's still,
He
it goes
keeps
on
letting
for
us
sure.
know. He really wishes he could have gone and gotten one more. I was like,
Gone and killed
no.
one more Japanese
No,
person
no.
or
Save it.
rescued a soldier.
Rescued one more person.
Okay, that's
Because, well, because
less
he's.
bloodthirsty than I was thinking.
Well, yeah, because Katie, the main character, the whole. This is why it's such a strange film, is the whole. The whole protagonist is pacifism. Like, he won't kill people.
Ah.
So, it's such a weird choice for Mel Gibson, because he. Everything about the direction indicates that he loves killing people.
Yes,
So.
yes.
So, it's just very. I found it, like. Very schizophrenic.
When the credits came up and I saw that Kevin O'Connell was the sound mixer, do we assume he will lose his 19th Oscar this year, whatever it is?
I think that's definitely going to get nominated because it's, you know, they love
They love war movies.
war, they love gunfire. Like, that's absolutely, it's, I'm as sure of that getting a nomination as I am of La La Land winning best sound mixing, even though every third person I talk to about La La Land talks about how dissatisfied they were with it. It's the only time anybody ever mentions sound mixing is talking about how they didn't like it in La La Land, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, there was another movie recently where... Oh, it was Inception. Where people complained about the sound mixing a lot, and then it was nominated. Like, yeah. It was like something you would not expect to be reading about in a review, and people dissed the sound mixing. It was the same thing with La La Land and
Inception. It's almost like in a lot of those sort of like below the line categories, like no press is bad press, because it's just like, hey, as long as they're noticing you, Elizabeth.
Yeah, like this movie has sound mixing. Let's nominate
exactly. It's going to be a long 5 weeks between nominations and award. 5 weeks, 4 weeks. Is it shorter this year? It's maybe shorter.
It's 4 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's like a whole economy built on the 4 weeks between the nominations and the awards. So Hollywood will like collapse if they shortened it too much.
Let's keep talking about Hacksaw Ridge. Like, let's devote the whole.
Let's not. What else? Oh, has everyone seen Hidden Figures now?
Yes.
It's so cute, right?
Oh my god, I loved it.
Yeah.
It's the only one of my screeners that my family watched over Christmas, which my mom then went on to catch more after I left. But like the one movie that everyone could sit down and watch, it was Hidden Figures.
It seems like such a slam dunk in some ways. Do you guys think it'll, well, because it's so moving in all the typical ways that would attract Oscar, plus it's just so mainstream accessible.
Mm.
Like, it doesn't feel like one of these movies.
It's not going to make you work for it. It's not
right.
Difficult. It's not, yeah.
And it's not the type of movie that people won't care about if it doesn't get any nominations. Like a lot of well-meaning historical type of things.
I feel like the opening it in January is really smart, because there's a lot of crap out there and it's going to do really well. Like, looking at the Box Office Mojo, it led the Friday box office. I feel like it's going to be this massive hit by the time the Oscars come.
Like an American Sniper thing.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's the feel good version of American Sniper.
Feel good watching American Sniper?
That the fake baby was brought a lot of joy to me, I will admit that. I mean, it's hard to know if, you know, you need the drumbeat of a popular hit to kind of work for you as the nominations are happening, which is happening right now. Mm-hmm. But that, like, that does seem enough to get Octavia Spencer in there right by now. And then when actual voting is happening, like, who knows? I mean, not that Viola Davis isn't going to win. But anyway, I feel like it's going to do really well throughout January.
I still sort of believe that a double supporting actress nomination could happen for that movie, too.
It could.
For Janelle Monáe as well?
Yeah.
Which is such a shame that Taraji P. Henson can't get in there.
Except for the Best Actress is so good this year. And as much as I love Taraji P. Henson, but as much as I love her, you know, there's way more than five people who deserve it more this year, I think.
Well, but I think that's true in supporting actress as well. But I feel
sure. But I'm just saying it's more. Best Actress has been,
yes,
this year has been so insane that it just seems like,
oh, I agree.
That would be asking a lot.
Nathaniel, I know this is not what we were talking about, but as Annette Bening kind of slips further and further out of the conversation, are you fretting?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't. I currently have her in fifth. And I think I'm going to move her down to six, which breaks my heart because I just love the performance so much. Yeah. But I still am holding out. I don't think Streep is going to get nominated.
Oh.
I think it could happen, though, without Streep. I think you could get Amy Adams and Ruth Negga both in there.
No, that's what I think is going to happen. So yeah. I currently think it's going to be Stone, Portman, Adams, Huppert, and Negga.
There's just no indication anywhere that people have seen 20th Century Women beyond, I guess, Hollywood Foreign Press.
It really drives me crazy. I mean, Annette Bening is amazing, but the fact that Greta Gerwig just like sank out of that conversation drives me crazy.
She's so amazing in the movie. I mean, everybody's, I think it's...
The whole cast is really good.
I think it's, you know, the whole cast's like almost best performance.
But I mean,
I also don't understand how it hasn't won any screenplay awards. I haven't even seen the movie, but the trailer alone gets like my screenplay award this year so far.
Screenplay runs circles around Manchester by the Sea screenplay, but that's just me.
But Joe, this is what you were saying the other day, right? That it's so crazy that once a movie is angling for a Best Actress nomination, it immediately loses all heat everywhere else.
Yeah. Well, we see that happening. This happening to Jackie is the thing that drives me the most crazy, because Jackie is such a filmmaker's film.
Yeah.
And with, you know, a very strong central actress performance, but like...
Debatable.
Okay. But, like, it's crazy to me that, like, it's going to end up getting like one nomination, maybe costumes as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's that it's sunk so much and it's become just like, oh, well, now it's just an actress play, is sad and typical, and like, that's such a bummer.
Do you think that's true of Arrival too?
Well, I think Arrival's going to have an advantage in that it's going to be a contender in things like sound. So it'll probably get like two or three, but like, it's a bummer that that's not in better in contention in things like Best Director and even like adapted screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, Nick, have you talked to Bradford about whether or not he's getting nominated for that over breakfast or anything?
I haven't yet. No, it's something to look forward to. We want to wait till we can see 20th Century Women together.
I thought it would be more of something like you didn't discuss. Like, no awards talk over breakfast.
Oh, that's true. That's a good policy.
That's a bad way to live with Nick, though, it seems, you know.
Well, it's the way Nick lives for sure. With the other partner.
But yeah, so Bradford Young for Arrival. That's really exciting.
I think that'll happen.
You do. Yeah,
I was just looking at your predictions, yeah, with Nathaniel, and I'm glad to see that you.
I think Arrival, like, I know that for whatever reason, Denis Villeneuve doesn't look like a sure thing. Even though he doesn't look like a sure thing and should, like, I think it's going to do really well across the board. But I also think it's not a feminine genre.
Right.
And because, obviously, as you're talking about, like, Best Actress vehicles losing heat everywhere else, it's always, like, a sexist problem somewhere, because in some way people process those movies differently, but I don't think people come at Arrival thinking of it as a woman's film.
I think that's fair. Right. Charlie agrees.
Oh my god, guys. He will not shut up. Loved Arrival.
You guys, I had the best conversation with Denis Villeneuve yesterday.
Oh, really? This isn't like fake Bradford Young conversation.
This is a real one. His flight was grounded, so I just talked to him on the phone.
You should have gone to see Silence with him.
But it was a really good conversation. He was like super bummed out because, you know, when he tells me, you know, when you're in the airport all day, it puts you in a really bad mood. I was like, yes.
Yeah, that is true.
He's a mere mortal like the rest of us and gets stuck in the Delta lounge.
Got out of our Hidden Figures thing quickly. But yeah, so we all liked it, obviously. But I feel like we should say something more about it. It's so enjoyable. What were you most impressed with about it beyond like how fun it is?
See, to me, that's the whole thing. It's just a very enjoyable movie. I don't feel like I have a whole lot of specific like things about it that are great. Mm-hmm. I think it's just very likable, and I think that's going to take it far.
Yeah.
I do think that in a movie that wasn't this kind of like, you know, it moves very well and it's fun to be in, like we were saying, but her big moment, like where she kind of screams at Kevin Costner and tells him that she doesn't have a bathroom, felt so anachronistic to me. Like, it just felt impossible based on even what the movie was telling me about this world of Jim Crow South that it would ever have happened. And it seems so much like an Oscar clip to play.
Right.
But it gets away with it. So, you know, I kind of like felt myself like starting to roll my eyes a couple times as I was watching the movie and then being like, let's just go with it.
Yeah.
I loved that moment. I don't know. I think you're probably right that it does feel like it's straining for exactly what it's doing, but it was so exciting just watching her get that. I didn't see that we were going into that tone at the beginning of that scene and just mm-hmm. to like hear her scream for a second. Because I also thought the movie was really good at those quick reaction shot moments or cutaways where the women just internalize yet another misogynist or racist moment and then kind of power through it. Like that last scene where she thinks they've closed the door on her when she's brought the calculations to the...
Yeah, that's a great scene.
And you think that it might actually end there, and she certainly thinks that too. Like, I liked how many of those there were that didn't always have dialogues. When they suddenly did, I was all there for it.
Like every scene with Kirsten Dunst is just kind of a swallowed in. The fact that she's in that, I feel like, is under-discussed. But she does a lot with what she has.
And you know,
in my fantasy life, she used to have a better role in it. But then after she participated in those con jury outcomes this year, somebody just cut off the scenes. Fuck you.
That seems like a pretty clear cause and effect there.
I think so. The Tony Erdman people are powerful.
Yeah, you have to hand it to Kirsten Dunst. She will serve the movie, whatever it's asking.
Yeah.
Because that is, in so many ways, a thankless role, but I actually think she's really great in it. I think she just nails that character, even though it's like a character nobody's going to want to talk about or praise, you know?
Yeah, I feel like that she doesn't get a whole lot of room to maneuver with that character, but right. In the little space that she does get, she does well.
And the fact that she's, I feel like she sets up the movie so well for that amazing Octavia Spencer moment where she dresses her down finally for her racism that she won't acknowledge.
Oh, oof. Yeah.
Did we talk about Janelle Monáe and Moonlight at some point and just the fact that she's like been this pop star for a decade and then suddenly is like, oh yeah, I'm an actress too, and just decides to share that with us? She's really on a pretty incredible role.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see what she can do with, you know, because in both of those movies she has kind of like the, she's very good in both, but she has kind of like the easiest part in both movies.
Yeah, just kind of a natural, yeah, appealing personality.
And maybe that's her screen persona working, and maybe that means she's actually like a born natural. But yeah. I would love to see what she would like. I'm sure she'll get the opportunity now. Because,
oh,
well,
boy.
Hello, Charlie. Yeah. A new Janelle Monáe fan.
Huge Janelle. He's not wearing black and white right now, though, but I feel like he should be.
No,
also,
yeah.
Also, Mahershala Ali, just also good in this one.
Okay.
Such a different role.
Is ubiquitous this year.
Well, his role in Hidden Figures is also kind of feels easy, like he just has to show up and like be cute, compared to what he does in Moonlight, but it's so nice to see him.
Yeah.
I was writing all this fan fiction in my head about Taraji and Mahershala reuniting after Benjamin Button, being like, didn't that suck? Oh my god, it was awful. I'm so glad we get to be in a fun movie. Let's be in a fun movie.
Dude, what's his role in Benjamin Button?
He's her suitor in that.
Yeah.
At the very beginning.
Oh my god.
I had totally forgotten that.
I don't think either one of them, like, you don't even come away really thinking about them having names in that movie. Like, they're in it, but
yeah, isn't sort her of name? Not. Isn't her name like Mom?
I think it's Queenie.
Oh, right, okay.
But she's kind of fighting to even be in the movie, to say nothing of him. But mm-hmm. Yeah, fun reunion.
That movie comes up because he had not changed his name yet. He was working as Mahershala Ashabaz Ali,
yep,
which is tremendous.
Yes. That should have been
just
the
slips
entry
right off the tongue, right?
Spelling Bee. That should have been your final word.
When you told me you were doing Movie Spelling Bee, that was the first thing that came to my mind whenever that arose the first time.
That would have been a disaster.
Bonus round.
Katie, the now two-time champion of my spelling bee, by the way, I should mention, here on the podcast.
I guess I should show up and give Katie a run for her money.
You really should. You would, for running your own site.
And as a former spelling bee champ.
Oh, come on. Of course. You know, you have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Just come to Brooklyn, Nathaniel. It's not that bad.
I have enjoyed that place whenever I've shown up there for those trivia things.
Wow.
No,
wait,
I have.
That place being Brooklyn or that
no,
place?
No, the place the place where they hold
the actual venue that we've held.
The venue, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like if this happens and we both show up in person, this has to be like an official meetup and have like podcast fans come and watch us out.
Oh, we should.
Fly in.
Yeah. The Film Experience Podcast presents.
It'll be what we do instead of a live episode.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I met this, I'm considering adopting another cat. Again, and so I met this woman who has like too many cats, and she's also, it turns out, a voice recording artist. Like, she does audiobooks and stuff.
Oh wow!
So I was asking her about the podcast, like, what?
It's Shelley Duvall.
Oh my god!
I was like, what equipment should I buy? Because like, so you know, can sound more for professional. So she was talking about, you know, live podcasts and all these other things, so it made me think of that. But then I looked at it because I was like, okay, so since we don't all do it in the same room, I would have to buy this equipment four times.
Oh.
And then she sent me the links and I was like, nope, that's out of the budget range.
Yeah,
would need a it's only something like $300 for the podcasting mic that people recommend.
Oh, is that all? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I would only need $1,200.
Listeners, if 300 of you send in $1.
But that's just
right.
For one of us. There's,
yeah,
four,
okay.
There's four of us.
We're never going to make it onto Fathom Events without these microphones.
It's true. It's very true.
I want to be live in theaters. Are all three of you, I know Joe's feelings because I read his lovely capsules in his top 10, but are you all solidly pro-Jackie?
I am extremely pro-Jackie. It was extreme. My number one.
It's my number seven.
Whoa, okay.
Why did you not like it?
I didn't really like it until like the last half hour when I started to realize I was kind of pulled in. And didn't know if I had just been... I didn't know if the movie... It felt like the movie had maybe gotten better, but maybe I had gotten better or understood what movie I was watching or something, but...
That is sort of how I experienced that movie, too, in that I was fairly sort of arm's length with it for, easily that first third. I was sort of like, what is happening here? And then I think immersion in it really helps, and I think by the end I was so wrapped up in it that I found it to be... that much more impressive. But I think that is the experience of watching Jackie. It is for a lot of people.
Was it for you guys too that you did it feel like the movie was revealing a recipe that hadn't been obvious at the beginning? Or
I don't know what I felt really sucked in from the very beginning, and I can't think of like specifically what it did in the very beginning that like drew me in so much, but I felt really focused on it. And even though I watched it at home, which I think is not at all the best way to watch it, like it kind of revealed itself to me as being internal and emotional and like having a flourish to it from the very start that I feel like that's the language it's speaking, and it hit me right at the beginning.
Yeah, it hit me right at the beginning too, but I also think it was sort of playing for whatever crowd I'm a part of that sort of I'm always backed up when I'm starting to watch a biopic, like, don't do this to me, because I don't like biopics so much. And it just felt
But
sort
it's
of,
96 minutes, so...
Yes, so I felt it was like
Which playing, is like my favorite thing.
Right, so I felt like it was playing to all of the things that I specifically have issues with, and it was saying, no, this is for you. Because it's so anti what you expect from a biopic, and it's so short, and I just, and also the score really got me immediately, and I think maybe because I've seen so many of his movies, like his voice, everything about it to me just really worked.
Yeah, I really need to watch it again, because when you try to think about like the beginning of the movie versus the end, like it's so jumpy in its timeline that I can't really remember like what cap except for the conversation with Billy Crudup, who I loved. And between that and 20th Century Women, I feel like he's also having an amazing year. Lots of really good double acts this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if you guys
your interview
read
with him was so good.
What?
Your interview with him was so good.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't know if any of you have read that, but he's so ridiculously humble.
I did not read this.
Time I tried to like say that was amazing, he'd be like, "Oh well, you know, anybody would have done it that way." I was like, "Okay."
He's going to be in the Alien movie next year. Like, bring it on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm You're here like, for this revitalization of his career.
Yeah, I've always liked him.
And he was in last year's Best Picture winner, lest we forget.
Yes.
Indeed.
So, Nick, I'm so curious about your reaction. For some reason, I thought you would... How have you felt about Pablo Larraín's other movies?
I've liked all the ones that I've seen. Although, when I read the reverse shot review of Jackie, which is, like, a really intense pan of it, I think it was Nick Pinkerton who wrote it, who said that he always has liked his other movies, although he notices that just a couple weeks or months on, it's disturbing that he can't remember them very well. Mm-hmm. Which I think maybe I have a little bit of that relationship to a couple of them. Like Postmortem I really loved, but I only remember a couple images from at this point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I have usually liked him, but I really struggled with Her a lot. For at least the first, like strongly for the first half hour, I was in like a Danish Girl place with Her. Mm-hmm. And then eventually got to a place where, like, the movies...
And that's a place you never want to be.
You didn't really want to be there. I was like, oh, man. And so then the fact that so many scenes are structured as watching her perform, like, almost as though the movie were under the skin, like, just zooming toward her or orbiting her or while the score plays, that was tricky. But the interview devices seemed really clunky to me, and all the sort of messaging in the script about like this being her preferred version of events, and it just seemed like a whole bunch of tricks that weren't coming together, and I felt a little very outside of it, but almost kind of giggly sometimes at her. And then eventually got a lot more sobered up. But I was telling Joe, like, Jackie Onassis and Natalie Portman are both prospects. It takes me a while. So like, I'm not the ideal viewer of this. But
I so vividly remembered that tour of the White House that's, you know, recreated in this movie from when it was on Mad Men, and how incredibly stiff she was, and like how bizarre the whole thing felt. And it kind of felt like the movie was just aping that tone in a way. And because I remembered that real scene, I think maybe that kind of clued me into how I should be watching it from the beginning.
Yeah, and I can't remember why I saw that. I don't know if they showed it to us in high school or something, but even the decision to like restage that, because you're right that for it to be stilted and difficult is what the footage was like to begin with. But watching her kind of get zealigged into it just felt contrived to me and a little bit too gumpy.
You've got some really good, like, the Danish girl plays gumpy. There's some good metaphors here.
Yeah,
it was just, but it, yeah, it's surprising though, since I hate all those, but I really love Jackie. But it's interesting that you're saying that about Natalie Portman, because like when I initially saw it, I was like, Jesus, she's amazing in it. And now, like, I've seen it a couple times, and you know, had a lot of time to think about it now, and I think she's great in it, but she's like I wouldn't even list her in like the top three part or the top five elements of it.
Which so, is what are the elements for you?
Well, I think the direction, the score, I think the costume design's great, and maybe the sound, like the sound in general. I like the whole. That's why I think it's so weird that it became just, like Joe was saying, just a Natalie Portman vehicle, because like the whole reason I think that people is so into her performance is how strong the film is focused on her.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I've kind of felt that way about Black Swan a little bit too. Like, she's really good in both movies, but I don't think
she's the reason they work.
I don't think she is the reason that those two movies work. I think those are very much director movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that she's the one who gets the credit for both movies.
Well, it's definitely the movie of all the ones that are in the conversation right now that I feel like I owe a second shot at, and that I felt my reaction to changing so much, or at least enough by the end, that I wonder what a second viewing would be like. But is there a movie in the group that you all feel that way about? Where you're not totally sure you trust your reaction?
That is a good question.
I sometimes have that in various calendar years, but I'm not sure I've had it this year. Like, I feel like even the Tony Erdman thing, I'm definitely not with the consensus, but I really feel like I gave that a fair shot. Like, I didn't watch it in pieces like people recommended for how long it was. I did all the things I normally do to recreate the theater experience at home. Like, I turned off everything, and I just was fully watching the movie for 3 hours.
Right. Yeah.
And I feel like I gave it a completely fair shake. So
I'd like to see La La Land again, because it's been so long since I've seen it, and the conversation around it changed so drastically from when I first saw it that I no longer necessarily trust my memories of it as being distinct from everybody else's assessments of it, that I want to see it again.
Yeah, I also need to see La La Land again, because I mean, I've talked about this. Like, I don't love being the La La Land skeptic in the world, and I want to love it.
Well, you're no longer the one, so I think...
Yeah, but I want to give it another shot, and I managed to see it in a theater, unlike many of the movies this season, so I feel like I did give it a fair shake, but yeah. I don't know. Like, I wonder if, kind of knowing the shape of it, I would be more sucked in by it, which has happened with a lot of other movies in the past. Or maybe I would just be even more annoyed by Ryan Gosling's character and check out at the start.
Yeah.
Well, Jackie is, or Jackie, that would be something. La La Land is coming to IMAX on Friday.
Yeah, see, that kind of shit happens, and I'm like, oh, God, like, is this where we're going?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, like, I have to say, like, it's interesting that you react that way, because I've read so many negative things about that, and I'm like, but why shouldn't a musical play on IMAX? Like, why are people reacting like that's such a, like, a betrayal? Like, it's not just for superhero movies. Like, why are people thinking that's a bad thing?
I don't get it when they put movies that were not filmed for IMAX on IMAX in general, I guess.
Okay.
But I don't feel they like regularly they do, it for do Magic that with Mike, hits? They should do it for anything.
But isn't that something they normally do for, like, I don't know. Maybe I don't follow IMAX enough to know.
Yeah,
I mean, no, I think it's definitely, like, has happened with many movies that were not filmed for IMAX, but it's a stunt that, I don't know. Maybe it does benefit La La Land to see it on a giant screen, so reopen the Ziegfeld and show La La Land there.
I would actually, that's honestly the environment I would most like to see La La Land in, is at the Ziegfeld. Maybe I just want the Ziegfeld to be open again.
Yeah, something we feel very regularly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because
there are a lot of movies in. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to repeat myself. Go ahead.
I feel like I'm having an opposite year from you. I have, I think, way more movies that I'm not only thinking could really change for me on a second visit, but maybe especially because I felt like they ended in a way that was playing so much more strongly to me than they began, where I'm used to there being a lot of movies that chug along really, really well, and maybe the ending isn't super great, but, mm-hmm. you know. But since La La Land was kind of that way for me, too, I was surprised in the last half hour that I really was engaged, having been kind of grumpy about it for a while, and Arrival I had a little bit of that with. But all of them I really want to see a second time. And I was that way with Manchester, too, which I then did see a second time and liked slightly more, although not so much more, maybe not as much more as I thought I would. Mm. And I like that movie, but looking at, like, the Globes tonight, I am such a Moonlight person, like, by so many zillion miles ahead of everything else, at least on the drama side. Mm-hmm. And most other things kind of shook out. Hell or High Water is another one that, like, I forget. Hell and High Water?
Yeah, Hell or.
Hell or, okay. That by the end I also thought, oh, this has been doing a lot more than I've been giving it credit for while I've been watching it. And that was kind of my experience of so many of the big ones this year. Hmm. Except for Moonlight, which was like, I'm having a sublime experience. Thank you. Very thank you. And every single minute, sublimity is happening to me. Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, the only one that I'm really off consensus on that maybe I should watch again, but I just have no desire, is Manchester by the Sea. Because I just feel like I really feel like I was paying very close attention while I was watching it, and it was okay, but mm-hmm. I just don't get why people
I think upset. With a lot of these movies with me, I would just want to see them again to sort of deepen what I initially loved about them, because this has been an uncommonly, like, great year for me in terms of, like, I can't see a Best Picture lineup that's going to have more than one movie that I didn't like, and, like, that's kind of fantastic. And so I want to see Moonlight again just to sort of, you know, maybe find things in it that I missed the first time, but not because, you know, not that made me not like it. Just I want to deepen my feelings for the movie. I want to deepen what I loved about Lion. I want to deepen what I loved about Manchester. And that's a good year for me.
Yeah. I want to see, I want to see Lion again. Just because so many people have been so against it, and I loved it so much that I'm like, wait, what was, you know?
Yeah.
So that's made me doubt myself a little, but I just watched Arrival again yesterday before mm-hmm. that interview, and oh, so good.
Yeah.
It held up so well.
And I want to see 20th Century Women again, just to exist in that space for another couple hours. Like,
my second viewing was just as gorgeous as my first.
I love that movie. All of these that I watch the most, that I end up watching, you know, most often, because it feels like something I'm just going to want to re-experience.
Yes, and I have actually been trying to internalize that when I do lists now.
Yeah.
Because I've been looking back at other lists, you know,
Yeah.
And even people like us who are very conscious of how movies change in history and how they age and stuff, since we talk about things like this so often,
yeah.
I feel like even people who are attuned to that can sometimes make the mistake of, oh, it's fun, but, you know, it's not.
Right.
You know, because the movies that generally...
Yeah, fun shouldn't be, you know...
Fun should never be a problem.
Right, yes, exactly.
And so, like I'm still, to this day, mad at myself that Mean Girls wasn't in my top 10 of 2004. Because yeah. of how many times I've watched it, you know.
Now,
so this year, the movie that I just kept in my top 10 the whole year, even though I kept considering dropping it, and I'm like, no, I know I'm gonna end up watching that a bunch, is Love and Friendship.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. I was that way about Sing Street.
Yeah, I think that's another one like that, for sure.
And Edge of 17, which I just saw, so and think fun. Is fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I'm so glad she got a Globe nomination for that.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, I still need to see that one, but yeah, that seems
like
tailor-made
it.
For me. Yeah. Yeah,
you'll like it.
Now, I don't owe Deadpool another shot, do I? Please tell me.
Do I have to see Deadpool?
I just watched it last night.
People are trying to convince me that he's going to get a Best Actor nomination, and I'm just...
He's not.
So angry at that notion. Like, don't do that to me.
He's not. I mean, he could win today, but I don't think he's going to.
That's insane. Like...
Yeah, I don't think he's going to, but he could.
It drives me crazy. It drives me absolutely crazy. What an obnoxious movie.
It's just so easy. That's what I don't like about it. It's just like, oh, let's be snarky.
Well, and as I said, it's the perfect movie for Trump's America because it makes a big old noise about how it's going to upset the status quo, and it ultimately delivers just... very ordinary vulgarity and stupidness. Oh my god.
It also just felt like its frame of reference was entirely other comics movies, in the sense that, like, those were the conventions it was so preoccupied with, like, sustaining in some cases but challenging in others, but it felt to me like so predicated on that frame of reference rather than what a good movie might be. Or
yes,
and I'm not meaning to, like, paint other comic book movies as though they're not good, but, like, you're only thinking about one kind of movie that you're trying not to be like, rather than, like, starting with an audience or a story or even, like,
the
utterly lackluster casting on every other side of him. It just seemed like self-hobbling in so many ways.
Yeah
Even though I kind of had an okay time, but it wasn't even as good at, I mean, you could kind of say something similar about Ant-Man, but I thought Ant-Man was a little more organically fun.
Oh, yeah, I thought Ant-Man was a lot more fun. Yeah.
Well, where this was desperate to be way more fun and just wasn't.
Yeah, and also it's just so... It seems very, like, sort of shoddily constructed, doesn't it? Like,
yes.
In terms of its budget and things. And I realized that maybe people like that it's kind of this, like, scrappy, like... indie version of it, but to me it's just like that type of movie just needs a big budget. I don't know.
Well, and for me,
I just felt the lack of money.
I didn't end up seeing it until it came on to VOD in the summertime or whatever, so by then I had already seen Captain America Civil War, and I know not everybody feels this way, but, like, everything that Deadpool was trying to be, like, very clever about, like, we're not like these other dumb movies, and I'm just like, but Civil War is such a better movie than what you're doing, like, at every turn, at every little, like, thing that you're trying to sort of be too clever about, and it's just like, no, that movie's just straightforward and doing it better, so try again, like.
Yeah, make fun of bad movies, not good movies.
Honestly.
But it is weird to discuss movies so heavily when we're about to have something that everybody's going to want to discuss happen to us with the Golden Globes.
I was like, the inauguration?
Oh, God.
Oh. On that note.
Sorry.
You know, I went to this thing, and you know when I did that Middleburg Film Festival?
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Months ago? They had a president, politics, and the movies event. At the time, it was like, I thought it was really interesting, but of course we didn't know what was going to happen. They were talking about portrayals of presidents in movies, and he was talking about the number of movies about specific presidents and how other presidents never have any movies about them.
Yeah.
Mm. And why that may be, and he was talking about the most, I think, the number one of modern presidents in terms of movies is Nixon.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And that, you know, maybe this should have been an ill foreboding at the time, but it was just like, it was going on and on about, like, you know, and he kept mentioning Trump and how Trump is, like, so Nixonian in so many ways.
Yeah.
And how Nixon was this figure sort of that America had to sort of exercise.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's so icky that we're going to replay all of that. And you know there's going to be a gazillion movies about Trump.
Yes.
Yeah, Oliver Stone is getting ready. He's doing his workouts.
he's already composing a first draft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that will be what he shoots, because...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's icky, icky, icky.
Yes, it is.
But if you want everybody to be saying your name forever throughout history...
That's all he wants.
Then being icky is the way to go, I guess.
Yeah, it's true.
My feeling is, as long as we still have a world after he's done, you guys can make as many movies about him as you want. Like, I just want to still be here.
Good point. Yeah. That's a very good point. And who knows, maybe somebody will make a movie about him as good as you think Nixon is, Nick.
Or Natalie Portman can play him. But you were trying to talk about the Golden Globes, and I mistakenly took us here. I'm sorry.
I have a baby squirming in my lap.
Okay.
Okay.
Be taken upstairs.
All right.
Charlie has an impeccable sense of timing.
Well, he did make his biggest contribution to the podcast. We know he's rooting for Janelle Monáe.
I know. I've heard that people like it when there's a baby on a podcast. I'm not sure how long that will last and if it will get old. So hopefully his contributions are still appreciated.
Well, it's because they're so unexpected when they happen.
I know. He's trying to grab the microphone right now. So he really wants to be heard.
Bye, guys. Bye, Charlie.
Bye. And next week, of course, we will talk about the Globes.
Yes.
Woo! All right.
Happy Globes Day, everybody.
Yes.
All right. See you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.